It's the Beyond the Berm podcast. Welcome to Beyond the Berm, a podcast about Disney and more. This is episode number 23 from burnsland.com. I'm Steve, and from startedbyamouse.com, he is also known as the fastest runner on the Beyond the Berm team. It's Matt. Hello, Matt.
Pork chops and applesauce to you, Steve.
Pork chops and applesauce. That sounds good.
That's what I'm making for dinner. It's not really a catchphrase. Okay. It's what I'm making for dinner.
Okay.
Except I'm not making applesauce, really I'm making a pineapple glaze, but the pork chops, pork chops are there, so.
Yes. pineapple is good on just about anything.
That's true.
Yes. So it's been a while since we've been here doing this. Things have gotten busy with football season for us and just general back to school stuff, and so. It's nice to be back.
That it is.
Yes. And you have the Disneyland Half Marathon coming up soon.
1 week from our recording right now, yes.
Yes. That's why we put you on the team, since you are the fastest runner. Which is probably not saying much, if you've seen me run.
I'm still planning on walking the half marathon, though. Did not get back into training shape after my knee pain subsided. I just figured I'd continue to walk. Still under the pace.
Right.
Actually, did not intend to last night, but I walked an additional half marathon distance last night. Just under the 14-minute a mile pace. So the requirement is a 16-minute a mile pace. So I'm well under. So
okay.
Looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, well, look forward to hearing about it later on. See if you have any stories to tell from it or fun experiences. Or I'm sure it'll be fun.
Yeah, I'll have to check
lots
it out.
Fun experiences.
Looking at some of the information they've sent over, it looks like there's going to be 13,000 people participating, which that's quite a bit in my opinion. But we'll see how it goes.
Right.
So maybe I'll have to throw a few elbows or something. coming through.
make your space in the crowd.
That's right.
So what else has been going on lately?
Well, I mentioned in our last podcast that there was a good chance that I was going to get to see Disney planes in the theaters, and sure enough, I did. We went as a family to see Planes at the El Capitan. It's a beautiful theater, Disney-owned in Hollywood, which I like to go to when we get a chance. This wasn't necessarily the movie that I would have necessarily picked to go see.
Right.
And, you know, it's one screen. It's not like a multiplex. It's one screen. So you're seeing it. It was a 3D showing. So although we don't usually spring for 3D, we caught the 3D showing of it. And I think I had mentioned previous episode, one of Chelsea's classmates' fathers worked on it. So he'd gotten to go to the premiere and stuff. And before we had a chance to go out and see it, he was, you know, we had packet pickup at the school and you find out, you know, what class the kids are in or whatever. And I talked to Kathy for a few minutes and he was just really bummed, really despondent. All the reviews were coming out and they were really pretty negative reviews, pretty glum. And I don't usually look at reviews. We've talked about reviews before. But I did go to see what people were saying, and they weren't very nice. I mean, they weren't great reviews by any means. So I was kind of, you know, I wasn't necessarily looking forward to seeing the picture in the theaters anyways. And then reading the reviews, I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, at least there's popcorn, you know? But I enjoyed the movie. It was a good movie. I won't say it was a great movie, but it was a good movie. I think, you know, and I think this is kind of what the reviewers missed a little bit. I think you kind of had to go in with the mindset too that this was a Disney Toon Studios production. This is not a Disney Pixar movie. It was not a sequel to Cars, which a lot of reviewers kind of made, and you know, Chelsea's friend's father, you know, was kind of bummed that they were comparing it to Cars. And I must say, I completely understand why they would too. I mean, it story-wise, setting, all that stuff, it was very much it was a Cars film. So anybody that, you know, doesn't know, and business, I mean, it's a business thing, who produced it, that it was Disney Toon Studios versus Pixar. I mean, really, it, you know, if you're not following it, you don't care. So yes, it, for all intents and purposes, it felt and it seemed like a sequel to Cars. And I think that was kind of the weakest part of it. And I think that was the problem, was that they really kind of built on this world that we've seen before. You know, even though it was planes as the main characters instead of cars, you still had your Pitties, and you still had, you know, some grounds crew that were, you know, vehicles, and saw the blimp that was, you know, used in the Cars movies, you know, was in this one to do coverage, and you had tractors as cows, and so definitely it had that feeling. It was very organic like that, and so that was the expectation. And then story-wise, I mean, it was nothing original. You've seen it all before. Very formulaic. You know, and it, I want to say it was a rip-off of Cars 2, but Cars 2 was cars traveling the world doing races, and this one wound up being planes traveling the world doing races. So it was not original in that regard at all. So, and you know, we've talked about Cars 2 in the past not being our favorite of the Pixar movies also. So I mean, if you're going to emulate a Pixar movie, you could have done better than picking Cars 2 with a very similar theme. So story-wise, kind of, I don't want to say a letdown, but I'll say a letdown. That was definitely the weakest link. It was not the strongest story. The story kind of served just to introduce the characters. You know, and then it also, unfortunately, you know, Disney and DreamWorks have had this battle for years, but it, you know, Turbo had just come out. We had seen that in the theaters about the racing snail, and so it kind of had a very kind of familiar theme there too. So on the negative, you know, all said, you know, not the strongest story, not the strongest setting. Kind of went in, you know, behind the eight ball a bit. But on the positive, it was enjoyable. I liked it. I had a really good time. You know, you had your Dusty character who was Lightning McQueen. You had the Skipper character who was Doc Hudson. You had, you know, Dusty's best friend Chug, who was Tow Mater. Even the bad guy Rip Slinger, I mean, he was Chick Hicks. So I mean, it did feel very familiar, even from that standpoint. There was one scene too, and it was a beautiful scene, and really nice scene where Dusty and a plane from India called the Shawnee were flying over, and they decided to go on a flight together, and beautiful pastoral scene, and they fly by the Taj Mahal, and it's all beautiful and everything. But it felt exactly like when Lightning McQueen and Sally went for a drive through Ornament Valley, and I mean, it was very similar. So that was negative, but it was beautiful doing it. You know, and I mentioned we don't usually go see 3D movies. I thought it looked sensational in 3D. I mean, you know, with planes, you would have almost expected that they're flying right at your face, or it wasn't really gimmicky. I didn't. The 3D never stood out to me in a way that it was like, here it is, here's a stick in your face, or a propeller flying at you, or and nothing like that. It was just, it really helped create a real immersive atmosphere. You really kind of got into the picture. You felt like you were flying through the clouds, for better or worse. So then another thing that was good that I didn't expect to be good is the music was really nice. I saw the score had come out, and I'd kind of listened to the couple samples on iTunes or whatever, and songs weren't great, but the score by Mark Mancina, it was really good. I mean, it was very reminiscent of old air, not necessarily World War II type of pictures that we've seen, but I mean, it definitely evoked kind of that whole flight soundtrack thing. But I thought it was really good, and so much so that I did go back on iTunes after I saw the film and I downloaded the album. So I really like that. I think one of the knocks about it, that I was reading was it kind of talked about how this was a flight across the world to many different nations in it, and somebody was kind of talking about that these planes were somehow racist, stereotypical type of things. And I'm not sure I would go quite that far. I think that the characters are very were painted in a very broad stroke, so you kind of knew who they were supposed to be. So yeah, and there was maybe some ethnic, I don't want to say stereotype, because that wasn't quite it, but I mean, they definitely simplified the characters, so you would know right away, oh, he's stuffy and doesn't cry, he's British, or if he's, so. And that said, yes, playing up on kind of this thing, the best character, the funniest character, is one called El Chupacabra, and he was a plane from Mexico, and he was hilarious. He was a really funny character. So I mean, if you're going, with the stereotypical, yes, I mean, it was very stereotypical. He was kind of one of those, I forget what they call the Mexican wrestlers, the Luche wrestlers or whatever. He was supposed to be evocative of that type of a character, but he was really funny. And then I also liked a character named Dottie. She was Dusty's kind of pit car, she mechanic, fix him up. But she was pretty good. I kind of dug on her. And then one really funny thing, I mentioned earlier about that they had the tractors from Cars. They were in the fields as the planes were flying over in that scene in India, and Dusty turns to Shawnee and says, "Why are there so many tractors around?" And she makes a reference to them being sacred. And I thought that was funny, that they were supposed to represent cows, and yet here they are sacred tractors. I thought it was pretty funny. So, and it wasn't a Pixar film, but they did have John Ratzenberger do a voice in it. For continuity's sake, I guess. And this is not going to be a huge box office win as far as total gross. Through this weekend, it's supposed to have taken in about $60 million, open with about 22.2 or so million. But to counter it, it had like $50 million budget, so it wasn't like one of these $200 million, production movies that is only doing 60 million thus far. So from that standpoint, it's pretty good. Kind of makes me think back a little bit on other Disney Toon Studios movies. We both worked at the Disney store, so we're very familiar with kind of the direct to video, don't want to say schlock, but Return of Jafar type of productions that they've put out. But they've also had, other things that they've, put into movies that I really like. DuckTales, the movie, that was really nice, because I enjoyed DuckTales, and then I thought the movie was better. I mean, it was better animated, longer story and stuff. So I thought that was really good. A Goofy Movie, which came out in the theaters, one of my favorites. I really like, Lester's Possum Park just cracks me up. The Tinkerbell movies, I've talked about them before, how impressed I've been with those. And those are all direct to video for the most part. I know that we were able to see one and at the El Cap before it came out, but for all intents and purposes, direct to video, but all really well done. And then, stuff like, the Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas or Mickey's Twice Upon a Christmas, I've enjoyed those too.
Those are good.
But then they're also responsible for, Fox and the Hound 23 and Bambi 17, and so I mean,
Right.
But I think if you went in to see this movie with kind of the expectations that that was the type of production that you were going to go see, I think it really blew the doors off of, a return of Jafar. I mean, for sure, this was head
Right.
and shoulders above. If you were expecting, the absolute, top-notch, Lasseter, Brad Bird, type of production with, one of the Newmans doing the music, and I could see where the disappointment would be, but I think for what it was, I thought it was a pretty enjoyable movie. I mean, it wasn't my favorite, but I thought it was really enjoyable. We had a good time. Chelsea really liked it. That's always my clue. I always ask her, or actually, I didn't even get a chance to ask her how she liked it. Usually, when I know when she likes a movie is as the end credits are rolling, she'll turn to me and say, "Daddy, can you download that to your phone?" And she means like right then. She doesn't quite understand that there's a lead time before a movie goes from the theaters to, that type of content. So, but that's how I know that she liked it. She wanted me to have it on the phone right away so she can watch it over and over. And for the rest of the weekend, I had to field questions about planes over and over, So she enjoyed it. She caught a lot of it and wanted to understand and make sure she got the jokes, and so it, from a kid's sake, it was a good movie. I'm glad I saw it in the theaters. It wasn't one I was gonna see. Glad I saw it. And
We have.
as you may have seen,
Go
at the
ahead.
D23 convention, they already have a sequel plan for next year, Planes, Fire and Rescue. So
Right. That was one question I was going to ask was how after having seen it, how do you feel about the upcoming sequel?
well, I thought it was funny
Is
because the
it.
sequel was announced before the movie actually opened, which I thought
Right.
was kind of funny. Honestly, I think that they could put the movie direct to video. I don't If they're putting it out in the theaters, okay. I'm not quite sure. I mean, we share a similar, sequel type of mentality.
Right.
You have to sequelize everything. So, from that standpoint, I don't need to see it in the theaters per se. But, going back to the whole business aspect that, I sometimes go back to, you're talking about that they produced this film for 50 million and it's already done 77 million worldwide. It was a movie that was going to be direct to video. They're still going to have all of that video ancillary income still. I mean, it's not going to hurt. I would imagine they're going to make more money because it was in the theaters. So that said, I would guess that, if they're producing this, if they feel like they can make their money back by putting it in the theaters rather than going direct to video, more power to them. I'm not sure. I'm not, I don't know. Chelsea liked it. She might ask to go see it, so maybe we'll wind up at a theater to see it. But it's probably something that, is fine on a direct to video type of format, but
We have not seen it, mainly because it came out the same weekend that school and football were both starting, so
right.
that took up a lot of our time, so we haven't had a chance to get to the theater to see it. And now I really don't know that we will. I'm sure we will see it on video when it comes out on Blu-ray. It's not necessarily that I was just opposed to seeing it. We just have everything else going on right now. So, like you said, from the previews, the more previews that I see, and the more they've done a lot of special commercials for American Airlines, I think it is,
Right.
and for somebody else. And those commercials look entertaining just with the characters. And of course, in a way, it helps because it has that familiar feel of the world of cars, like they talk about. And so you look at it and immediately pretty much know it's either cars or planes or something similar. So that does look appealing and entertaining. Interestingly, yesterday we were at Target and they have planes merchandise all over at Target. So I didn't stop and ask anyone how well it was selling, but they had all the planes, they had different sets, they had different sizes of the planes, they had a remote control plane, and they had just the little die-cast plane. So We talked about that before too, about how I'm sure they're hoping it will be a merchandising hit as well as a movie motion picture hit,
right?
As Cars was. So they certainly have the merchandise out there if you want to buy it. Like you said, it always makes you wonder when they announce a sequel, even before the movie is released. That usually shows that the studio has confidence in it. Sometimes it makes you wonder if they're trying to say, we have confidence in this movie, so you should too. You know, we think it's worth making another one, so go see it. I don't know if that was the case here, or if just the D23 convention was a good time to announce things like that, so they mentioned it then. So I don't know. I'm interested to see it whenever I do get to see it. I don't feel I'm missing out on the 3D, even though, as you said, the 3D was well done. And that can add some to a movie. I don't know if it's always necessary. So I'm looking forward to it. It will be one that we will watch. And like you said, I think the real audience for this one is people younger than us, basically.
Right.
Children more than anything. And so if Chelsea enjoyed it, if Jalen enjoys it, then really they've accomplished one of their main goals, I think.
I would agree. I think this is probably more of a kids movie versus a family movie. You know, you look at a Pixar, mm-hmm. and it, you know, it appeals to multiple segments of the family, whereas this one is definitely more of a kids movie.
Right.
And yeah, I would say go, you know, see it. I don't know that you have to rush out to the theaters to see it, to be honest. I think it'll look fine, you know, on your 50-inch TV or with your nice sound system, mm-hmm. and you don't need to see it in the 3D. I still right. haven't seen it in the 3D. Don't know that I would have sought it out in the 3D had we not, you know, seen it at a theater where that was the exclusive showing. But, you know, I did enjoy it. It felt very three-dimensional. Sometimes, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past. We've seen 3D movies, whether it be live action they've converted or even animated, and it's like looking at a ViewMaster. It's like, yeah, it's 3D only because you have, you know, a character on one plane and a character on another plane, but they're not three-dimensional. Whereas planes, it felt three-dimensional. I mean, it felt like you were, not quite sure, it felt like you were watching a play per se, but I mean, the characters felt three-dimensional rather than, look, they're on multiple planes, and that gives it the depth. So that was the enjoyment factor, but is it necessary? Probably not. Although it did make me wonder what I was missing in Monsters University by not having seen that in 3D. So who knows, you know?
Right.
And then speaking of, just a little bit of an aside, speaking of movies that, you know, a studio has confidence in and, you know, announcing sequels or whatever for it ahead of time, I found it interesting. Mm-hmm. They just launched this Disney Infinity game system. You know, happened to be shopping out the day that it was released. We went to both Toys R Us and Target at the time, and I found it very interesting that we were at Target and they had, you know, all the sets, all the figures, all this stuff. And everything, I believe, was on sale because it was a launch, but they had the Lone Ranger figures for half off, like right out of the gate. Mm. So I think that was kind of funny. You know, we're talking about them having confidence in it, and here they, you know, definitely incorporated the Lone Ranger and Tonto characters into this brand new game system that it then comes out, and it didn't do so well in the theaters, and they've already discounted the figures that if you want to add them to your toy box, they're already half off.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of funny.
I wonder if those will be collector's items.
Maybe.
In the distant future.
Maybe.
So you do not have Disney Infinity, do you?
No, and I don't want to buy, even though it looks interesting, and yeah. Right. Like I said, we went into these stores that on the launch date, and you know, so Kathy and Chelsea even looked at them, and I think they were kind of inclined to go with it. And I really had to explain to them, it's like, okay, it's $75. You get the software, you get the three figures, you can play, but if you want to expand and go beyond, you have to buy the additional figures in order to incorporate them into your worlds.
Right.
And for me, that's the drawback. I don't want to keep spending money on top of my initial investment. You know, the nice part about it is, from my understanding, is you can take these figures and it's programmed with whatever to interact with your game console, and it's available across a number of game consoles. And, you know, so let's say that I go to my friend's house and he has an Xbox. We have Wii. I would buy it for the Wii. He has Xbox. I can take my figure and it has all of my settings, all of my world, all of my system, and it will incorporate into his Xbox, so I can actually play it on his game console, even though I have a different game console. Presumably I can save my progress or whatever we're doing, but I can go and it's not just a virtual thing now it's also a reality thing, you know, if you had friends who were playing it, which I don't, right. But if I did, you know, that would be a nice selling feature, I suppose, rather than, oh well, I have that for the Wii, oh I have it for the Xbox, and the two shall not meet. So,
yes,
there's a big part of me that is interested in it. And Chelsea's into it. I'm not quite sure how she got into it. And I don't know if Jalen's into it in any way. She got into this Minecraft, and she plays it, you know, on the iPad. So it's kind of like a stripped down version, a light version. But she, you know, she enjoys building these worlds and all this stuff. And hate to say that it's lost on me, but it is a bit lost on me. But she's into it, really interactive and building. So I know she would really enjoy, you know, the Infinity, especially the toy box, where she can actually build her own worlds using all these Disney things. So it's tempting from that standpoint to get it for her. But you know, as you said, you know, not that we have football, but, you know, we have back to school and we have dance and we have piano recital, and we just don't have time really to get into a whole new game environment like that. And I had to keep reminding myself that. Still haven't gotten through Epic Mickey 2, so I don't think I want to bring in a whole new system, but as appealing as it looks, I don't know. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody, whoever's listening, you love Disney Infinity, please let me know that it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I will be more inclined to go ahead and look into it further. So,
I've been hearing a lot of good things about it. We don't really do video games in our house for whatever reason, time mainly. So I don't really have any way to play it if we did get it. Would have to buy a whole game console and everything. But it does look interesting with how you can have these different characters from different movies interact. And it sounds interesting because evidently they can, when new movies come out, they can create more characters and you can add those into the game too. So
right.
I'm sure that's where the Infinity name comes in. And so it's really a cool concept, I think. You know, some people are saying, well, you can't really have characters from this movie and this movie together. You know, Captain Jack and Sully, you know, they would never really interact. And, well, then don't buy the game and play it, I guess.
Right.
But it's, you know, it is interesting from that standpoint to me about just having them together and having all the Disney characters interact with each other in different ways, besides just their own movie. So it sounds pretty cool.
I did think that it was interesting. I was watching the commercials, and you know, I know video game ratings are different than movie ratings, and you know, movie ratings are guides at that. I mean, there's no steadfast rule. But I did find that interesting that, from what I saw, this Disney Infinity is rated everybody 10+. I'm sure, you know, because as they were showing, you know, Mr. Incredible throwing something and having something blow up in the background, I'm guessing, you know, the cartoon violence perhaps gave it a higher rating, but
yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's Disney, you know. I mean, my kid's 7, she's supposed to want to play with this Disney game, so, you know. So
right.
I found that interesting.
Especially with all the characters like that.
Right. Not that would be a drawback for me not getting it. I just found it interesting that it seemed to be
rated
a little strict for, you know, as they always said about any Disney movie, for a kiddie movie. or a kid type of game system. I thought that that was an older age group to start with.
Right.
But it looks like fun. Definitely looks like fun.
Yeah.
And you mentioned having to buy it. You would have to buy a console to play it if you were to get into it. That was always how I felt they'd come out with a few years ago, this Disneyland video game for the Xbox Kinect, which looked incredible, and we've seen it. And we played it a bit at Disneyland. They had it set up at the Mad Tea Party in the arcade there. Chelsea and I played it, and it still looked interesting. So, I mean, we were really interested, but that would be the drawback for me too. It's we would have to buy an Xbox and the Kinect in order to just play, and we'd only be really interested in the one game. So that would kind of be the buzzkill for us. Whereas the Disney Infinity, you know, hey, it's across multiple platforms. I have at least one of those platforms, so I could play it without having to go too far into debt just to play the one game.
Right.
Anything else fun and exciting happening in your world?
Yesterday, we actually had time to watch TV a little bit.
Okay.
And it just happened. We turned on ABC Family, and we saw they were showing some great movies. We saw parts of Hunchback of Notre Dame and Hercules.
Cool.
And the Princess and the Frog. And Cinderella.
Cool,
so
cool.
They were showing those all day long, different times during the day. And I thought, well, this is pretty good. And then the one of those that I liked the best, kind of surprised me, looking back at them now, the one that I enjoyed seeing again the most was Hercules.
Yeah.
Just kind of haven't seen it in several years and kind of forgotten how much I enjoyed it. It was, you know, broad comedy. Laura mentioned the animation looking a little bit rough compared to some of the others, which was the style they were going for. And so it was a more graphical style, I guess, and great character work. James Woods as Hades has just always been a favorite.
Right. So I know you like the Hades character in general. You've talked about him in previous podcasts too. So.
Mm-hmm. So it was pretty neat to see that again and to see the others. So I don't think we have The Hunchback on DVD or Blu-ray, actually. So haven't seen that in quite a while either. So it was good to see that, too. And then Cinderella, I don't know when the last time I watched any of Cinderella was. It just happened to be on after The Princess and the Frog went off. So we watched some of it as well late last night, too. So I still... You know, we go back to the same thing every now and then about why doesn't the Disney Channel show things like that? Why do they leave it to ABC Family to do it? And the Disney Channel does at times on special days. You know, if they're having a premiere of an animated movie at night, they'll show others during the day, which is kind of what ABC Family was doing. They were showing those leading up to The Princess and the Frog being on last night. So it was good to see them all, and like we've said before, it's not necessarily ones that I would go grab and put in, but they were on, and there wasn't really much else on, so we watched them, and it was enjoyable. In a way, it reminds me, too, about how a lot of those movies are timeless, really, about, you know, Cinderella really fit in pretty well with the others. I know the animation style has changed, and techniques have changed a little bit. Since that one was out, but they all went well together, and it's good to see movies like that. I wish they were still making hand-drawn animated movies, and maybe they will again sometime, but sometimes I forget how entertaining those movies are and how fun they are to watch, except when we have a chance to see them like that.
Yeah, they're upgrading our cable here in Burbank, and so we had to go out, it's going to be all digital, so we had to go get boxes for all of our additional TVs or whatever, and as we were flipping through, we noticed that we have Disney Junior which I don't know if it was a blip or what, because we don't usually have the subscription to that. And they were showing Cinderella, so I thought that was kind of funny that ABC Family was showing it at pretty much the same time, I'm guessing. But I agree, it's timeless. I mean, even, yeah, there's probably a little bit, you know, about, you know, but even going back to Snow White, I mean, you can watch pretty much any Disney film through the golden age, and it's still enjoyable. You know, you can still sit down and watch it. And there are some movies, you know, that Disney and or Pixar produced in more recent times that, you know, you look at and you go, wow, that's dated. And whether it's because of the look of it, because maybe it was more of a contemporary style, or maybe because the music or the humor, or, you know, there's always something about some of the more recent films that, you know, they're hugely popular when they come out, but they don't necessarily hold up the test of time. And you could say that maybe about any movie. You know, you go to, you know, the supermarket or the, you know, Target or wherever, and you look in their video section, and, you know, there are a lot of movies that are, you know, in the $5 on DVD. And you look at the Disney movies, and they're $29.99. And it's like, it's very interesting that, you know, Hollywood kind of complains that there's no market for the DVDs, but yeah, it's because if a movie's more than maybe 2 years old, nobody really cares to see it as much, which is why you can see it for free on ABC Family, maybe. But, you know, the Disney ones seem to have some value, and they have held through the years, and you can pull them back in the vault and release them every 7 years to a brand new generation. And so it is interesting. Yeah, Chelsea has watched Hercules in the car, and so I don't get to watch it. I just listen to it, and that very funny movie. I mean, I really,
yes,
I enjoyed it when she was watching that. Hunchback was maybe my favorite of the animated ones, or at least, you know, some of the more recent. Although I haven't watched that in a long time, so I wonder how I would feel watching that again. Cinderella's great. We've seen that. You know, Chelsea's a princess, so we had seen that, and like I mentioned, it was just on Disney Junior, so we were watching part of that. And then Princess and the Frog. I haven't seen too much lately. I think that, you know, I think the Shadows kind of freaked Chelsea out once upon a time, and you know, she was, I think, 3 when that came out or something, and she sat there and she enjoyed it, but I know that that freaked her out, so we don't watch that one as much. But that one's a great movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a great way to spend a day, just watching old Disney movies.
It was good. We didn't sit there and just sit in front of the TV the whole day, but just whenever we were in, turned it on, there happened to be a good Disney movie on. So that's a rarity sometimes, that there's something on worth watching just anytime you turn on the TV. So it was good to see some of those, because lately about the only thing we could find on worth watching is Golden Girls reruns late at night, so which are entertaining too,
right?
A little bit dated, I guess, but I enjoy those. Laura thinks they're okay. Jalen hasn't seen them, which is probably good.
Oh, it's interesting. I contemplated, and I'm not going to now, I mentioned the cable fiasco. We were going to wind up having to pay more for the same functionality that we had before, because now it's better. It's all digital. Whatever, I'm not going to go into that. But one of the things that I had been contemplating with the cable company before that is they have a subscription channel called Disney Family Movies. I think it's $10, and you get a month's access, and I think they have 10 Disney movies that they change every week. So you, for $10, I assume that you're going to have access to 40 movies, or, you know, somewhere in there. And I think they show shorts, and I'm quite sure it's TV shows, but I believe it's kind of like an on-demand feature. So you get the subscription to it, and then you go to the on-demand thing, and then here's your list of, I don't believe it's just a channel that just runs and it's on. So I believe you get to go and pick your movies. And yeah, it's a lot of kind of B and C level movies, probably a lot of this Bambi 42 that I just mentioned. But but I don't know. I thought that that might have been a way to sort of, you know, get that Disney groove back a little bit without the Disney Channel showing the stuff. I was very close to contemplating, you know, and it's a monthly subscription. It's probably recurring until you cancel, but, you know, I could have canceled or whatever, but I was contemplating. I thought, you know, $10 for Disney Entertainment for the month, probably not the worst investment in the world.
Right.
But I'll hold off for now. Especially if ABC Family's showing Disney movies. I'll just have to flip it over there then.
I don't know if they're going to show any more of those regularly or to stick to their Pretty Little Liars and Switched at Birth and whatever their dramas are that they have at weeknights.
Right.
Saw plenty of commercials for those. Evidently, they're winding up the season or something. I don't know. I don't keep up with those, but saw plenty of commercials for them anyway. So, got to make their money somehow, I guess.
Yep.
Have you heard about the expansion of Club 33 at Disneyland?
I have heard a little bit that they're going to take over what is right now I believe a stock room and a break room. And expand that direction over towards the Court of Angels.
Right.
I've caught briefly, you know, that I heard that actually part of it, I've heard that they're going to close the trophy room. If I remember right, for expanded kitchen facilities or something.
Right.
And presumably update and, it's a bit dated up there, so still cool to go, but I would presume they're going to update the decor somewhat in the other rooms. But yes, I've heard a little bit. I don't know if there's any more specifics that have come out recently.
The big uproar this week is over whether or not they are going to take over entirely the Court of Angels so that you have to be going to Club 33 to even be in that one specific area.
I see.
Or if they're just putting a new entrance somewhere in the Court of Angels, and not taking over the whole court. So that's been the controversy the last few days. I've been kind of seeing it some on Twitter. There is a Save the Court of Angels or something or other going around because people are evidently convinced that they are going to close off the whole Court of Angels, which is, you know, it's a pretty neat little space. For not having any real attractions or anything, it's a nice little area of the park, and so it got me to thinking about just how possessive people are of Disney things,
right,
especially the parks, but the movies too. Really, and I was thinking that yesterday when we were watching all these different movies as well, about how to so many people it's more than just a movie. You know, it's these are almost like real characters. You know, you can't mess with those characters, and that goes back to the Disney Infinity thing of, well, you can't have this character from this movie and this character from this movie because it just doesn't happen.
Right.
And so, you know, people are possessive. It's interesting to me to watch sometimes to see how these people react to different things. And, you know, I have my favorites at the theme parks too. If they were to close like the Walt Disney World Railroad, for example, or the Hall of Presidents, or some other, you know, attraction that most people think is not a major attraction, you know, I'd be upset about it too. Not to the point of saying, well, you know, Disney is ruining my life because they're closing whatever. So it's interesting how people react to Disney. You know, I wonder, whenever Universal Studios closes something, do they have the same kind of uproar from the fans, and I just don't hear about it because I don't keep up with Universal Studios and whatever they do?
Right.
Or are people just not quite as possessive there? I don't know.
I would bet now if they were to close, you know, some aspect of Harry Potter World, you might hear about it. But yeah, I'm not sure that there's an uproar, you know, if they change, you know, Jaws to Whosville or whatnot. But right, I do wonder. I guess I'm of kind of two minds about this a little bit. You know, Court of Angels, as you said, is a nice little space and quiet, not really there. So it's, you know, underutilized at best. And if what I've heard is true, I don't know if that's the area that they're going to have to put in a handicap accessible lift or whatever, because that's one of the knocks on the current Club 33 is you can't get proper wheelchair into the glass elevator, which I know because I've gone with somebody handicapped and we've had to go back through a cast member entrance, up an elevator, in through some kitchen areas, and so I understand that. So I don't know if that's why maybe the Court of Angels is losing its space a little bit, or if they're simply going to make that the entrance or whatever. So, from a practicality standpoint, from a nobody owes me anything standpoint, Disney can do whatever they want to do with that area. I'm good with that. I understand that. But on the flip side, knowing what the area is and kind of how quiet and whatever, I would probably guess that there have probably been a lot of marriage proposals offered there. And if you close that area off and it's no longer accessible or it's no longer what it once was, that can be tough. I mean, you have a certain memory that maybe you attach. It's not simply, oh, hey, that's a nice place that I've passed by a number of times, but it might have a real kind of connection for you. And I could see that. I'm not terribly, terribly sentimental about the particular patch of garden where Kathy and I get married over at the Disneyland Hotel, but that's no longer available as a space. I mean, they've created a new wedding pavilion, a few hundred yards away, and whatever, whatever. But, on our anniversary or, anytime we're down there and we choose to kind of go in that area, we could tell Chelsea, oh, we get, see right in the middle of those palm trees that are over there and the garden, that used to be a little place where your mom and I get married. So I can understand the sentimentality. Not sure that this space is necessarily, let's say, worthy of the uproar. And I know they've had issues before when I think they were going to have the Pirates League there a few years ago. They were going to take over that space for, it was kind of the boys' version of the Bippity Boppity Boutique they were going to have there. And I know that they use it sometimes for character greetings and, Christmas they'll take over the space and make it a merchandise space, or so I know that there have been uproars before, but yeah, so that is interesting that seems to be, maybe people are upset, because they might never have the opportunity to go to Club 33, but they're able to use the Court of Angels. And now, something that they won't be able to access is taking over a space that they've been able to access. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, it is interesting to the degree, the minutiae that the Disney fandom kind of gets into tizzies about seemingly very small, inconsequential things.
I guess the good thing is it gives us something to talk about every couple of
Must
weeks. So,
make it difficult as a Disney manager as to what you can and can't keep. So, and as I was told by the lady from our cable company, progress marches on, and even if it costs you more, the whole world's doing this now, and you just have to pull up your big girl panties and handle it. Progress.
Yeah, that was like the uproar too about when they were adding Starbucks into the parks, and everybody was like, "Oh, we can't have Starbucks, it's going to interfere with whatever." And of course, if you go back the whole history of Main Street in particular, it was corporate sponsors from day one, basically. So, and as long as it's done well, which from everything I've seen, it has been, it's no big deal. It's nothing to get upset about. My thing about when they were adding Starbucks in was like, okay, well, everybody will be standing in the Starbucks line, and I can go get on the rides first thing in the morning, because everybody's needing their coffee, and I don't drink the stuff, so good for me. Yeah, it's interesting to see what people get upset about. Like when they closed Mr. Toad's Wild Ride at the Magic Kingdom back many years ago now, and there was a whole like a sit-in thing that was organized about, Save Toad, and I don't know. It's interesting, you want to say, it reminds me of back when we were visiting the archives on one of those trivia competition trips, and Dave Smith was talking about some of the different calls that they get about, you know, why is this, or, you know, how does this, or what happened to Pocahontas' mother, or, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. And his answer is always, it's just a movie. He said, you know, you have no idea how many times I have to tell people, it's just a movie. I ask all these crazy questions. And the same thing, you know, when it comes down to it, it's just a theme park. And really, it's a business.
Right.
And that's what it comes down to for them. You know, the idea of keeping Court of Angels like it is versus expanding Club 33, which is, I would imagine, a pretty good revenue generator from the fees that they charge for that. So, which is going to win? Well, in management eyes, I'm sure the increased revenue that they can get from the increased Club 33 space versus the Court of Angels space that really, except when they put some shop things in there, as you were mentioning, doesn't generate specific income. So, you know, when it comes down to it, it's just a business.
Right.
Yeah. Sad but true. And it's a business that people are passionate about, which, you know, also, as a manager, you want that. I would think you would want people interested in your park and what goes on, because that's what keeps them coming back. So,
agreed.
But, yeah, but it's just a business. So, not to burst anyone's bubble, but, you know, those things aren't really real. It's just a business. So, anything else? That's kind of a downer. Do we want to end on a downer?
I don't know. I feel like I could go for a marathon, but looking at the time, I think we should keep it to our half marathon.
Yes. To keep people coming back for more.
Let's play two.
Yes. Well, thanks for joining us, and next time we'll look forward to hearing about the Disneyland half marathon and whatever else has happened between now and then. You can keep up with us on our website, beyondtheberm.com, or on Facebook, or on Twitter, or on iTunes, and we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a comment, send us an email, let us know what you think, let us know that you're out there listening. Shout out to my sister who said the other day she listens to every episode. Hey, okay. So, our one or two regular listeners out there. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Pineapple.